Hey friends, I hope you're all staying as safe and healthy and comfortable as possible, and that you're taking care of all the people and pets and plants that are important to you. This past week, while driving to work on the highway, I saw something I don't usually see. No, it wasn't a woman putting on her makeup. That's something I see more often than you'd think. What happened was all of a sudden, the traffic on the highway in front of me slowed way down, and I could smell smoke. And I looked to my right and I saw that this long triangular strip of grassy land on the highway was on fire. And at the tip of this triangle was a red pickup truck, and in the middle of all this flaming grass was a man dressed as if he had been on his way to an office job, and he appeared to be trying his best to put this considerable fire out using only his feet while attempting to look as nonchalant as possible. I have to assume that some sort of flammable chemical, maybe gasoline, was leaking from this red pickup truck, and then maybe some kind of friction due to an axle issue or something ignited whatever the flammable chemical was and caused this highway median to catch completely on fire. Frightening to see. I hope that guy and his red pickup truck are all right. Folks, you are listening to the People Are the Enemy podcast. I'm the host of the show. My name is Andy Mascola. There are no ads on this program and there is no Patreon set up for it. The only thing I've ever asked of listeners is if you love the show and if you'd like to help support it and myself monetarily, and get yourself or the reader in your life some excellent fiction, please consider purchasing any or all of my books. I'm the author of 11 self-published novels that are all currently available worldwide in both ebook and paperback formats via Amazon. If you don't use Amazon, you can find and purchase all of my titles in ebook format at Google Play. Just search my last name, which is spelled M-A-S-C-O-L-A. That's how you'll find me on Google Play. If you've already purchased any or all of my books, thank you, thank you, thank you. I sincerely appreciate your generous patronage. And with all that out of the way, here's the quirky theme song. Hello, People Are the Enemy listeners. This is episode 326 of the People Are the Enemy podcast, and you are now rocking with the best. Thank you for checking out the show. It's good to have you along. Hope you had a pleasant holiday weekend. Hope you're doing well. I'm going to bring this down. For those who do not know, that is the band Modest Mouse with the song Float On from their album Good News for People Who Love Bad News. That album will be 20 years old next month. I couldn't believe it when I found that out. That's my favorite Modest Mouse album, and maybe I'm a poser because I'm pretty sure that's their most popular album and probably the best-selling album, and that song is probably their most popular song. It's like being a Radiohead fan. Like, I talked to a younger guy over the weekend at a dinner party, and I said, hey, David, do you like Radiohead? He said, I like Creep. I want to say, yeah, so does everybody else. No, that's all right. He obviously, you know, some people just scratch the surface. But I suppose that's the wonderful thing. If you know, like, one great tune by an amazing, otherwise amazing band, you've got a lot to explore there. You know what I mean? Maybe get around to it eventually, maybe you don't. But, yeah, as far as Modest Mouse is concerned, I heard that single when it came out. I lost my mind. I listened to that album over and over. I knew it inside and out. Loved it so, so much. Now it's 20 years later. Holy schmolies. Hey, I started putting my dog's crap in my own trash can. You'll be proud of me. It might have been the most controversial thing to come out of this podcast, like, ever. when I mentioned on the last show that what I'll do while walking my dog is pick up her droppings and usually put them in somebody else's trash can on the street. And my wife, who rarely listens to the show, listened to that episode and said, "Andy, I told you not to do that." I was like, "Really? I'm so sorry. I don't remember." I said, "But it's such a pain to like walk it all the way." She said, "Andy, I see people all the time. You know, they're carrying their dogs, you know, the poo-poo bags. And they're bringing them home to their own heads." She said, "You would not want somebody putting another dog's crap in our trash can." And she might not be wrong about that. So I've corrected that behavior immediately. As soon as that episode dropped last week and the hubbub started and my wife listened and sat me down and said, "You must stop doing this," I stopped immediately. That's the kind of person I am. I want to be a source of positivity and light and optimism in the world. I'm sincere. I really do. I really don't want to rub people the wrong way. You know, I really do want to be... I don't want to be liked necessarily. I'd like to be understood. But I don't think being liked is as important. But I do want to be a force for good in the world. It's a small thing to do. Putting my own dog's crap in my own trash can, walking around with it for an hour before putting it back in my own trash can, but I'm doing what I can. All right, you want to see something weird? Watch this. Oh, this would be fun. I found this out today because I was trying to listen to this album, and I was like, "You got to be kidding me, Siri." Watch this. Another instance of Siri censorship. "Hey, Siri. Play the album Bitches Brew by Miles Davis."
"Here's Brew by Miles Davis."
Come on, man. Bitches Brew? Really? She gotta put the kibosh on the word bitches and Bitches Brew? Shoot. I started journaling this week. Yeah, I made that happen. I've been doing it, I've done it 3 days in a row with my daughter, and she does the same thing. We get our journals out. She says, "Dad, we'll go for 15 minutes. We set a timer, and then it's just pen to paper, just writing for 15 minutes straight. I get about 2.5 pages. It feels great. I am so digging it. What will I do with this journal? I don't know. Maybe set it on fire when it's completed. Man, it's good to get this stuff out, I suppose, but, you know, I don't know if I want to revisit this stuff. I suppose maybe it's sort of like a weird psychological exorcism, you know? You think all these people driving for Amazon, you think like they're, you know, they're on the road for hours upon hours. Are they, they could be our future storytellers, don't you think? I mean, I'm sure they've got some stories and they're like sitting there. I'm sure like they're listening to podcasts and music and just thinking and driving around. You know, I'd hate to think that like the advent of Amazon and these communities, like basically every community now has to have these Amazon, you know, truck drivers who deliver packages. Like, I'd like to think that maybe these people, you know, these people are doing this to some end, you know. I listened to a lot of Bob Dylan this week. That has nothing to do with Amazon. But man, oh man, do I love that guy. You know, I don't know Bob Dylan, you know, super well. You know, I know Highway 61 Revisited. And I know Blood on the Tracks. And I know Planet Waves. Those are all albums I own. I know Planet Waves isn't like one of his most popular albums, but, and you know, I've dabbled in a couple of greatest hits compilations. I'm not like a huge Bob Dylan guy, but I listen to the Freewheelin' Bob Dylan from front to back. I mean, obviously there's Blowing in the Wind is on there. Hard Rain's Gonna Fall. There are songs I knew on that album. But what a pleasure, man. It opens with Blowing in the Wind. And it just takes you on this journey, just listening to that album. One wonderful song after the other. Lyrics are fantastic. It's all, I think the entirety of that album is Bob Dylan on an acoustic guitar with a harmonica. And him singing, obviously. And that's it. But by the time you get to the end, man, you feel like he took you somewhere. You know what I mean? You feel, and he leaves you on an up note, too. There's, at the end, he's cracking jokes, you know, in the songs, obviously. And you're like, oh, man, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Dylan. I'm looking forward to that biopic there with Timothée Chalamet. I saw a picture of him as Dylan, and I'm like, oh, this could be great. I really hope it's great. I mean, my cousin made a joke, speaking of movies. On Easter Sunday, I was watching Oppenheimer with my father. And I told my cousin this, and she said, Hoppenheimer. I thought that was cute. How long would Pauly Shore last in corporate America? I'd give him like 3.5 hours. I don't think he could last very long. He's a wild man. I have to imagine that he would do something to unnerve somebody right away. I don't think he'd be able to behave himself. I've heard stories about him doing, like, you know, just palling around with people and just really not respecting their boundaries. That, and he says whatever the hell he wants. And that's sort of been his entire life, really. I got to imagine, especially now, like, re-entering corporate America over the last 2 weeks with this new job. And just like looking around and thinking to myself and kind of like, you know, obviously, you know, it's a company culture where you have to behave a certain way, you know, and that's all dependent on what kind of company you work for. But in this company, it's, you know, it's formal for sure. And I just, I thought to myself, Pauly Shore wouldn't last 4 hours here. He'd be in the HR office pretty quick, I imagine. Okay, I don't have a whole lot for you today. I'm sorry about that. But I did have this clip I wanted to play that I thought was quite fun. This is a clip of Lou Reed, and it must be from the 1980s, because a reporter is asking him about the movie Police Academy. But before we get into that clip, you know what's coming next. Oh, that was my phone. I need the clip theme song music. Here it is. Whenever there's trouble, without the double, we're the bloodhound gang. If you've got the crime, we've got the time, we're the bloodhound gang. Thank you, Bloodhound Gang. For folks who don't know, Police Academy was a franchise that began in the mid-80s. The first movie, I think, came out in 1984. It was a rated R comedy starring Steve Guttenberg, who was in a lot of comedies in the 80s. I seem to remember. Good actor. Funny guy. And it was obviously like a police academy. Were they good movies? I don't know. It's like as a little kid, I thought they were the best. I mean, I never saw the rated R one because I was too little, but I saw Police Academy 2. I saw Police Academy 3. I saw Police Academy 4. And as a kid, like, I loved those movies. I thought they were so funny. Probably because Bobcat Goldthwait was in them. And he played like a leader of like a punk gang, and his name was Zed, the character that he played, which was essentially Bobcat Goldthwait's quote-unquote character. You know, if you've seen Bobcat Goldthwait at all. Well, I should say, like, not recently. If you know the history of Bobcat Goldthwait and his stand-up career, you know what he does. And he kind of puts on this this character, which is, I think, is hilarious. And if you're ever interested, if you're ever curious about the feud between Bobcat Goldthwait and Jerry Seinfeld, look it up online. It's kind of amazing. Evidently, Jerry Seinfeld had a lot of resentment for Bobcat Goldthwait's success, mostly because Bobcat Goldthwait was essentially doing a character. And he didn't, and Jerry didn't consider that comedy, I guess. But I loved Bobcat Goldthwait in Police Academy 2, Police Academy 3, Police Academy 4. And I think those were the only ones that had Steve Guttenberg in them. I think after that, the franchise kind of fell off. But another interesting factoid about the Police Academy franchise is that David Spade, that was the very first time I'd ever seen David Spade. And I believe he was in Police Academy 3 as a skateboarder. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. And he was quite good in that. And I think David Spade got paid $5,000 for that, if I remember correctly, for that role in Police Academy, and bought a car with it, a used car, that immediately was stolen back by the person who sold it to him. Isn't that awful? He drove it somewhere, parked it on the street, walked away from it, came back, and it was gone. You might as well have just, paid $5,000 to drive a car from, off the lot, down the street, and then park it. I don't know what stops that from happening all the time. Maybe it does happen all the time. Maybe people are selling cars and stealing them back all the time. Anyway, this is the musician, Lou Reed. Whoop, there's the phone again. Talking with a reporter, and the reporter is asking him about cinema. And Lou Reed has an opinion about Police Academy, and I thought this was quite good. And here it is. Check it out.
The sites of movie makers are being lowered. We get movies that are really popular but maybe aren't that good, Police Academy or Porky's.
I like Police Academy. No, everything has its place. One day we wanted to see something really gross and stupid, and Police Academy was perfect. When you're in that kind of mood, you don't want to think. You don't want to even have to follow the jokes too well. You want something really that's just right in your face, and that's what Police Academy was. I don't know if they teach it at film school, but, Thursday afternoon at 2, it was okay.
Pretty good, right? I don't know if he's just being contrary, too. Obviously, Lou Reed was a bit of a grouch. I say a bit of a grouch. Yeah, he was a grouch. And he could certainly harangue a reporter. And maybe maybe that's why he said those complimentary things about Police Academy. I say complimentary. I suppose they were backhanded compliments. But, yeah, I don't know if those movies would hold up today, but for a 12-year-old, 13-year-old, 14-year-old me, they hit the spot. They got me laughing. I had some fun watching those Police Academy movies. I'm going to hand things off right now to our friend, Rachel from Des Moines, and she is going to give you the chart chat. So, without any further ado, take it away, Rachel.
Thanks, Andy. Hello, and welcome back to Rachel's Chart Chat for another week. Thanks to everyone who listened last week. I got some nice comments from Sherry, Tavy, Jill, Sarah on Blue Sky, who shared a Guided by Voices cover of Downed I really enjoyed, and Jeffrey, a.k.a. VJ Big Suit. For this week, I decided to take a look at the Fools of the Hot 100 in honor of the holiday. Using my spreadsheet of Billboard hits from 1955 to 2013 from Ray Woodcock's site, I found 151 songs with F-O-O-L in the title. That includes 13 with Foolish, like Steve Perry's Foolish Heart, Jewel's Foolish Games, and two number one hits, Debbie Gibson's Foolish Beat and Ashanti's debut single as a lead artist, simply called Foolish. There are also 18 songs with some verb form of the word, such as Elvin Bishop's Fooled Around and Fell in Love, or Def Leppard's Foolin', and did you know the full title of the Talking Heads' Life During Wartime was Life During Wartime, in parentheses, This Ain't No Party, This Ain't No Disco, This Ain't No Foolin' Around? This leaves remaining all 120 songs about fools of some kind or another. Let's go through a few of them in chronological order. From 1956, Why Do Fools Fall in Love? Frank by Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers. It debuted on February 11th and hit a peak of number 6 on March 24th. It was also a number 1 R&B hit. The group was founded by junior high school friends in Washington Heights neighborhood of Manhattan. The boys in the group wrote the song themselves, although the credits on the single don't always reflect that. This was the biggest hit for the Teenagers. They had 4 other Hot 100 appearances. Lyman left the group after a couple years and tragically died at age 25. The Teenagers did carry on through various incarnations, and they stuck it out at least through the 2000s per Wikipedia. There are many covers of Why Do Fools Fall in Love that charted, including one from Diana Ross that hit number 7 in 1981. Why Do Fools Fall in Love was also the title of a 1998 movie on Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers. Staying in the 50s, Ricky Nelson had a song called Poor Little Fool that debuted on July 7th of 58 and hit a peak of number 1 on August 2nd on the charts for 15 weeks. Ricky Nelson has been mentioned previously. He was part of the Ozzy and Harriet family. This was Ricky's 10th charting single and first number 1 after being in the number 2 spot twice. He would top the charts again in 1961 with Travelin' Man. Poor Little Fool featured the Jordanaires on backing vocals. They're known for appearing on many Elvis songs. Poor Little Fool was the first number 1 on the new Hot 100 chart after Billboard combined the Most Played by Jockeys and Top 100 charts. It also hit number 3 country and number 3 R&B. Moving ahead to the late 60s, Aretha Franklin had her hit Chain of Fools debuted on December 9th of 67 and hit a peak of number 2 on January 20th of 68. It was also a number 1 R&B hit. Aretha sings about realizing her boyfriend is a serial cheater and she's just one in his chain of fools. The song was written by Don Covey and produced by Jerry Wexler, who is quoted in my number 2 hits book saying he played an acetate for songwriter Ellie Greenwich, who felt she heard a missing background vocal. She sang him her idea and he put it on the track in the final version, along with The Sweet Inspirations and 2 of Aretha's sisters, Carolyn and Irma, all doing backup vocals, and Carolyn and Irma were singers in their own right. Ellie Greenwich isn't necessarily a household name, but she wrote or co-wrote many iconic 60s songs, worth a goog. We're heading into the 70s, and there's a few I've already covered in past Chart Chat segments. In 1972, The Main Ingredient hit number 3 with Everybody Plays the Fool. In 1974, Canadians' Guess Who had a number 28 hit with Their Tale of Being a Dancin' Fool. Frank Zappa would reuse the title in 79 for a number 45 hit from the disco perspective. And in 1976, Foghat were Fools for the City at number 45. Moving on, Chris Rea had a great song called Fool, in parentheses, If You Think It's Over. It debuted on the charts on July 8th of 1978 and it hit a peak of number 12 on September 16th. It was also number 1 on the AC chart at that time called Easy Listening. Chris Rea is a singer-songwriter-guitarist from Middlesbrough, England, and Fool was the lead single from his debut album, Whatever Happened to Benny Santini. The single was released first in the UK. It didn't do anything over there. Then in the US, it was a decent hit. In September of 78, Chris performed on Top of the Pops in the UK, and that finally got his song to chart at home, hitting a peak of number 30. He went on to have a very successful career in the UK, but never returned to the top 40 in the US. He did have 5 other singles make the Hot 100, and Wikipedia states he never toured the US. The song is from 1978, and it surprised me somewhat to read that. The sound feels like it's ahead of its time. Chris could actually kick off a separate category discussing the acts who are a one-hit wonder in one country but a prolific artist in the other. As we move through the 70s, the Doobie Brothers released What a Fool Believes and hit the charts on January 20th of 79 and hit a peak of number 1 on April 14th. It was the lead single from the group's 8th studio album, Minute by Minute, their 3rd with singer, songwriter, keyboardist Michael McDonald. Michael McDonald co-wrote What a Fool Believes with Kenny Loggins, who also cut a version on his 1978 album, Night Watch, though it was not released as a single. Loggins and McDonald's collaboration writing the song was dramatized in episode 1 of the Yacht Rock web series, which I encourage all listeners to check out. I know Sherry is a big fan of those guys too. The fellows behind the Yacht Rock show take lyrics about fools as a factor they consider when determining if a song is yacht or a niat. What a Fool Believes is the one song they have rated a perfect 100 on the Yachtsky scale. A total of 17 songs with Fool in the title have been rated as Yacht,
including a cover of What a Fool Believes by Aretha Franklin.
The Doobies even had another Fool song on the same album, How Do the Fools Survive? Staying in 1979, Led Zeppelin, with their song Fool in the Rain, this debuted on December 22nd of 79. It hit a peak of number 21 on February 16th of 1980, staying on the charts for 13 weeks. This was the sole single from Led Zepp's 8th studio album, In Through the Outdoor. According to a site on Wikipedia, John Paul Jones and Robert Plant were inspired by the samba beats played during the 1978 World Cup in Argentina. The song is known for a samba breakdown kicked off by a whistle. The instrumentation on the song includes drums, timbales, agogo, marimba, maracas, shaker, gyro, and whistle. I was surprised to learn that Led Zeppelin charted a U.S. single off of each of their 8 studio albums except for 1976's Presence. Plus, they had 3 songs off Coda make the Top Rock Tracks chart. The line, Fool in the Rain, never appears in the lyrics of the song. Moving ahead to 1980, and we're back on the boat with the Larson Featon Band and Who Will Be the Fool Tonight. This was rated as essential on the Ya or Nyat episode 45. The duo was composed of keyboardist Neil Larson and guitarist Buzz Featon. Both were session musicians before teaming up for an album. Who'll Be the Fool Tonight was their sole Hot 100 appearance. It debuted on August 16th of 80 and hit a peak of number 29 on October 11th. Another certified yacht song with Fool in the title was Jim Fotoglow's Fool in Love with You, already discussed on People Are the Enemy 280. It hit number 25 on July 4th of 1980 and has a real goofy video that looks like a PBS educational show for English language learners. I also previously covered Walter Egan's Fool Moon Fire, a really cool werewolf song that was a number 46 peak in May of 83. Up next, a song from a musician who sadly left us recently, namely Welsh multi-instrumentalist Carl Wallinger of the group World Party. World Party had a number 27 U.S. pop hit with Ship of Fools, in parentheses, Save Me From Tomorrow, in the spring of 1987. The song has an environmentalist message, and it was the group's only U.S. Hot 100 appearance, though later singles made some other charts, including Way Down Now, which was number one on alternative airplay in 1990. Continuing through the late 80s, we find George Michael kissing a fool in his number 5 hit ballad. It was the 7th and final single from his solo debut, Faith. George Michael wrote the song back in 85, but it didn't fit with the Wham style or image, so he kept it for his solo record. It has a feel of a classic jazz standard. Kissing a Fool was successful worldwide, if not to the level of the other singles off of Faith. It was a number 1 U.S. adult contemporary hit. To round things out, we catch up with Kenny Loggins gamely returning to record the theme for Caddyshack 2, Nobody's Fool, and getting a number 8 hit for his troubles. Kudos to Kenny for working Be the Ball into the lyrics. Cinderella also had a song called Nobody's Fool in 1986. And finally, White Snake slithered into the top 40 to number 37 with their song Fool for Your Loving, a re-record of their own song from 1980, just like they did for Here I Go Again, as discussed on People Are the Enemy 288. Fool for Your Lovin' was number 53 the first time out. There's not a lot in the 90s to pick from. Fools really fell out of songwriters' favor in the 90s. I only found 9 songs, and 2 of those are covers. And there was only 3 for all of the 2000s up until 2013. Well, that's all from me this week. Happy April Fool's Day. May any pranks you encounter today be funny. Back to you, Andy.
Thank you, Rachel, for that awesome segment. So many memorable Fool songs, right on. And thank you also, Rachel, for reminding us that if you're listening to this episode on the day it's made available, it's April Fool's. Watch out. This has been episode 326 of the People Are the Enemy podcast. Our theme song is Walrus Love by Nokia Ocean. You can find that song and more at pizzapuppies.bandcamp.com. My name is Andy Mascola. You can purchase my novels via Amazon and other online book retailers in both paperback and ebook formats for as little as $1.99. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you, Rachel from Des Moines. We love you. Peace.